Hi everyone, it's Sunday, December 19th of 2021. Can you believe it? We are almost to the end of the year. So I hope that all of you listening are putting together your Build-A-Budgets for the new year. That was your homework assignment that we talked about several weeks ago, or maybe even months ago. But today I'm going to be talking about my thoughts relative to my Dear Dollar Diary series. This is episode number 6 for accumulation to distribution. I learned some things this week and I want to share my thoughts with you. But the main portion of today's episode really is all about an article that I just read. So I wanted to react and share my thoughts about Jackie and her story in her FIRE journey. Coming up next. Hey, before we start our episode, always remember, if you don't want to be broke at 40 like I was, or if you are broke at 40, stay tuned on a weekly basis where I explore the basics of personal finance and, more importantly, the behaviors that can bring you from broke to brilliance, whatever you think brilliance may be. And as always, this podcast is for entertainment and educational purposes only. Please consult with a financial advisor if necessary. My name is Evan Thomas, and this is the Broke at 40 podcast. Hi again, everybody. Thank you for joining me on today's episode. So last week, you listened to my very long episode where I was talking through acronyms for 2022. So I hope that you enjoyed that. And as you know, I came up with an acronym for myself, which is ICE, Interpretation, Choice, and Execution. Because I feel like right now in my life, for planning my financial journey, that acronym pretty much sums up everything that is giving me strength to move forward and think about and make the right decisions. As you know, as I go towards financial independence, and actually, that's really not the way I should phrase that if you think about it. It's not that I'm trying to get to financial independence. I think I have attained financial independence. And I know many of you that are part of the financial independent community, you're doing the same. You may be broke at 40, you may not be, you might be halfway there, you might be, you know, just starting out. So I know many of you listening are at all sorts of different parts in your journey towards what we refer to as financial independence. And I'll be sharing a little bit about that with you today in this episode when I get to Jackie's portion. But really what I'm struggling with, and I've been trying to communicate to you, and I hope effectively, is that like many people, we just have to be more prepared emotionally. And I don't think I'm really there yet, which is not a bad thing. This is a good position that you want to find yourself in at age 55 or whatever age you get to when you think that you've attained financial independence. So again, we know I don't have to quit my job. So as I go into 2022, I'm really keeping ICE in the forefront of my thought process, interpretation, choices that I have, and making the right choices, and then executing upon those. And so, as you know, over the past many months, I've been talking through my Dear Dollar Diary episodes where I kind of talk to you about my thoughts. And I wanted to do that today in episode number 6, preparing for when I get to a distribution phase. So I had an interesting week. I want to share these thoughts with you and I hope that I convey it effectively. That's my goal, is to share with you what I've been doing and learning about primarily healthcare, because as you know, one of the biggest things that we all think about if we want to retire early, whether it be 56 years old for me coming up next year or 57, which would be 10 years before my regular retirement age, that's huge. Or even if it's 49 years old, like we'll hear with Jackie's story coming up in a little while. So it's, you know, interesting then that I have these thoughts in my mind about healthcare, because as I shared with you before, that is a large chunk of my expenses, remember? $17,000 for my regular expenses for food, gas for my car, electric, internet, homeowners association fees, everything, right? Everything that I need, even fund money is wrapped up in the, $17,000 is not wrapped up in, is not the fund money. So $17,000 for expenses, for true expenses, maybe $5,000, $6,000, which is actually kind of low, as I shared with you previously, for fund money. But then $10,000 additional, I budgeted, as you know, for healthcare if I decide to quit my job before the age 65, which you better believe I'm going to be doing that. It's just a matter of finding, you know, the place and the time to do that, or actually the time to do that, and making that right choice. But I went to healthcare.gov, remember, and I did a lot of research on that. But what I'm finding through Marketplace is that I picked up the phone and I called them, because what you do is, if you need health insurance, and remember, I'm just role playing right now. I'm not really going to quit my job quite yet, but I'm pretending as though I am in early 2022. So I thought, well, if I do that, I'm going to need healthcare. And remember, through Vanguard, I had done an estimator, and so we thought that perhaps it would be like $10,000 per year to cover healthcare. And as you know, I'm such a frugal person that to me, that's a lot of money, you know? So I went to Marketplace, healthcare.gov, and I filled out an application, which I actually did several months ago, but I didn't complete it because I started to get a little scared because I didn't really want to complete the entire process. I was just curious about how this all works. Well, what I decided to do was to complete the entire application, which I further learned, which is okay. You can complete your application. You can actually go back and update the application with new information about life changes, like income changes and such. So I can continue to put in numbers and save it and then figure out what they're going to say as it relates to that, which I'll get to that here in just a minute. So I finally went to healthcare.gov, completed the application, and it came back and said that I qualified for a premium tax credit of like $700 a month. And I was like, what? This is crazy. Because I would be paying myself within 100 to 400% of the federal poverty line, which is, I think, about $12,860. Don't quote me, but it's something like that. It's somewhere around $12,000. And then 400% of that would be up to like $54,000, somewhere in there. So as you guys know, I'm wanting to perhaps pay myself $32,000 per year, which is what I have told Vanguard as far as the amount of money that I would need as my starting point from my investments. But remember, I could also go up to like $40,000 and still be okay as far as the likeliness of that money not running out by the time I get to 100. Okay, so you remember all of that. And so, but remember, $32,000 includes the $10,000 for healthcare. And if I qualify for a tax credit every month of $700, that means that I could either choose a healthcare plan through Marketplace that has a very high deductible and very high out-of-pocket maximums, $7,000 and then $8,000 for the out-of-pocket maximums, deductibles, did I say that right? Deductibles and out-of-pocket maximums, you know, so that I would be, in a sense, for 1 year of healthcare thinking, okay, I haven't really gone to the doctor much over the years except for annual physicals, and would I want to be taking a risk and say, okay, I'll self-insure and pay for the doctor visit because I know I have that high deductible, but I would qualify for free healthcare. In other words, if the premium that I was going to pay is under the $700, then I would actually owe zero per month, which is crazy. It's a crazy concept. So this is Obama, the Obama plan, and of course now through Biden, the Affordable Care Act. Now, I also want to just say that my thought process is, I don't know that this is going to last for like 8 years to get to age 65. So I'm not naive enough to think that, you know, our government is going to have plans like this for 8 years up until when I qualify for Medicare. But it is something that is there right now to help people out that would be paying themselves or have a job that doesn't pay health benefits and they're in lower dollar amounts. So they would qualify for these premium tax credits. So since I wouldn't have a job, and by the way, this took several revisions of my application. I actually even picked up the phone and I called Marketplace and spoke to a couple people very knowledgeable, because the deadline really for healthcare is like December 15th. But I did qualify for an extension because I would have a life change, which means the life change would be that I would quit my job. So as you fill out the questions, it's a little confusing, but I did it right. And then I did it wrong. And then I picked up the phone, I called them, and they said, no, you did it right the first time. So I switched it back. And so it's just really crazy to me to think that this could be motivation for some people, myself included, to pull the trigger a little bit early and say, okay, you know, I'm willing to quit my job and live off my investments, and especially if I could qualify for these premium tax credits. Now, again, in diving in a little bit deeper, again, this is just what I'm learning. These are my thoughts. You know, do your own research, but I'm still continuing to learn about how this could potentially work. And as I clicked on, you know, what my income estimates would be in the application process, I decided to put in $28,000 because I was thinking, well, maybe I'd have to pay tax of like $3,000 or so, being in a low tax bracket of about 10%, perhaps. I don't know, somewhere in there. So I was trying to say, okay, if I pull from my investments $28,000, maybe, you know, $3,000 would be taken away with tax, and then that would leave me with a net of $25,000, which then, you know, the $25,000 minus your $17,000 for true expenses would still give me about $8,000 for fun and other, which still is kind of low. Now, that could be $6,000 if I had to pay $2,000 a year if I chose a plan which had a lower deductible and about the same out-of-pocket max of about $8,000, it seemed, when I would scroll through the list and look at all the healthcare plans. So I'm still thinking, okay, those are the options where it's very interesting. So to bring my, you know, forecast of 10 grand a year down to 2000 is very encouraging about then quitting my job. But again, I just have to stress that in my mind, I think, okay, this can't possibly go for 8 years, or could it? You know, maybe, I don't know, because I'm still going to be paying myself pretty low. You guys know I'm super frugal. And so I don't really need a lot of income in retirement. So I would be qualifying most likely for some type of credits, I would think. Anyway, it's just something I'm thinking about. And I wanted to share that with you. And as I dove in deeper, and I'm still investigating and still trying to figure this out, it's very interesting to me. I put in numbers of, again, the $28,000 from income sources. Now, it would have to be from capital gains income. That's what the way they would qualify income, capital gains from a taxable account, interest and dividends. Okay. All right. So you guys know I have a taxable account of about $130,000, which Vanguard told me that would be the first resource anyway, remember, to pull from in retirement before I get to the age 59 and a half. And then I can go into the 401k. Now, remember, before there were some different options within that, the rule of 55 on the 401k, but let's just leave that alone and say that I decided to pull from the $130,000 over the next 4 years or so, which would deplete that account, but it would probably last 4 to 5 years. Now, that would be given if we don't go into a bear market. I'm still figuring like that kind of stuff out. Like, what if all of a sudden it loses a bunch of value? What do you do? Sell it now when the market's high? I don't know. But anyway, I'm still working through that, but maybe it would last 3, 4 to 5 years potentially at, you know, $25,000 a pop per year. And because I would be pulling from the capital gains, interest and dividends of that account into a spending account, then when I, well, actually you would get the premium tax credit right away. Very interesting. So the government, IRS, they would be sending their portion to the insurance provider for healthcare, I would come up with the difference. So if the policy was, you know, $600 and I had a credit of $500, I would pay the $100 a month differential. Okay. So it could be, I don't know, $1,200 a year to $2,000. I'm just budgeting. I'm just saying maybe $2,000 a year that I would pay towards those premiums, because I probably wouldn't do the highest deductible. I'd probably lower that down. And there's some co-pays and things. There's tons of available plans through Marketplace, which is the government entity, I guess you could call it, where all of these companies that you're very familiar with have plans that people can choose from for healthcare. So I wouldn't want to do COBRA from my employer for the, what is it, a year and a half or something like that, where by law they would have to give that to me. But then I would be paying the full price, which would be like 10 grand a year or potentially more. So I learned a lot really this week about how this works. I hope I'm on the right path. I don't know. I'm going to be talking to an accountant, a tax preparer, to ask these questions to see, am I on the right track? Is this actually possible? And when I spoke to Marketplace, they said, absolutely. You know, even if you have savings and such, you know, it has nothing to do with somebody's net worth. It really has more to do with if you qualify based on several things, which of which I did qualify. But most importantly, it's the income that you would pay yourself either from a low paying job and or from the investments that I just shared with you. Now, if at the end of the year, let's say I do pull the plug in 2022. Let's say we get to the end of the year and I prepare my taxes, then you have to fill out a form. Don't quote me on this. It's something like 6089 or something like that. There's a form in addition to your regular taxes that you then reconcile. You settle up. In other words, what if I got to the end of 2022 and for some reason I decided to pay myself from my investments more than the 25,000, right? Or I went above the 54,000, I think it is, to qualify. And it's a tiered income thing, for lack of a better word. So what would happen then at the end of the year, because you then took more money from those investments and you no longer qualify, let's say, then I'd have to pay all of that money back, the 700 a month or whatever it was, times 12, right? So I'd have to pay all that money back. So in my mind, it kind of encourages people, early retirees maybe, and even people then that are in lower income levels, you know, that have a job, that don't get health benefits. It's amazing. Yeah, this is, you know, Obamacare, and now with Biden, the Affordable Tax Act, I guess it's called. And so maybe, what does it do? Does it reward people that want to be frugal, perhaps, even if they are in early retirement? And I hope I'm getting this right. But if it does, it encourage people, right, to use their taxable account if they have it, which people do, I know, when they retire early, because you can't tap into your 401k, et cetera. And I wouldn't pull the Roth right away. That would be the last thing I would probably pull from. So yeah, Uncle Sam is being paid then because I'm taking that money out of that account, paying the taxes, but they're rewarding me for not paying myself much throughout the year and then giving me this huge tax credit. So let me just wrap that part up. I know I've been rambling here just a little bit on this episode number 6 of Dear Dollar Diary, but I'm still learning about distribution. And so again, I'll share with you a little bit later. I think what I'll do is I normally do my taxes through taxact.com on my own every year. Maybe what I'll do is I'll hire a professional to do my taxes, and I'm going to have a meeting with that person to say, you know what, I learned a lot about healthcare through Marketplace. Am I on the right track? Is that how it works? And in all the research I've done, and you guys can do the same if you want. I know for many of you, if you're in your 40s right now, you're not even thinking about things like this. But it's something that's on your radar for the future. And again, for me, it could be very, very encourageable. Is that the right word? It could encourage me to, you know, retire a little bit earlier. So again, though, yeah, with the caveat that who knows how long that plan or that act would be in place. If Trump comes into office, maybe not. I think I've heard where he wanted, you know, to get rid of that Obamacare. So anyway, it's just something, again, that's on my mind, my thought of the week that I wanted to share with you. So let's segue now into the content of today's episode. So moving right along again to today's content in the episode is an article that I have in front of me right here on my phone. I just read it this morning and I kind of went through and thought, well, this would be a really great story that I could share with my listeners today on the episode. And you guys know a lot of times I do like to share what I'm learning with you and create content for you that hopefully is inspirational, that motivates you to stay on track, especially as you know, for late in life savers like you may be and like I was. I was broke, as you guys know, at 40, had a bankruptcy at age 29, and just learned so much through the years. And, you know, I hope I made the right choices. I think I really did, you know. And so I'm segueing into, as you know, distribution, which is then, you know, quitting your job and saying, woohoo, okay, now I'm going to move on and do something else, focus on passion projects and all of those things that we like to think that we can do. And so I have this article. I think it's from NBC Select, I believe it's called. It just popped up on my phone. And so I read it quickly this morning. I didn't want to spend too much time on it because I wanted this to be a reaction as close to me reading it for the very first time and sharing my thoughts with you. And it's called, is there a title? It says, "This woman grew her wealth and retired by age 49. Here are 5 steps she took to do it." And her name is Jackie. I'm not going to read her full name here, but I will call her Jackie. That is her real first name. I get inspired by things like this because I think, you know, wow, age 49, you know, for me, I just said a minute ago, I didn't even think about, getting smart with money until like age 38. So there was no way I could, being broke at 40, ever retire in about 9 years. You know, for me, it took, and I haven't even retired yet. See, that's, yeah, I don't have the, what's the word I'm looking for? The courage, you know? So Jackie does have the courage. And so I want to read this to learn more about, you know, not only how she did it, that's not the part that I'm concerned with, but more so on the emotional side. So it says, Jackie shared her journey from poverty to financial independence with Select. So I'm just going to go ahead and read through here. And it says, achieving financial independence and leaving the workforce before the traditional retirement age of 65 has become the aspiration for many people. Of course, absolutely. It certainly is. It was for me, and it probably is for you guys as well. It says, for Jackie, that goal became a reality when she retired with $1.3 million at age 49. So let me just pause for a minute. Here's a woman that is 49 years old, which is how many years younger than me? 6. And she had the courage to retire at age 49. And here I continue to struggle at age 55. She's got $1.3 million in assets. I'm assuming that is her asset and not her net worth, because net worth can be more, right? My net worth is 1.3, but the assets I have is 1.1. So I'm older, so my money wouldn't need as much time to sustain my life, right? So yeah, that's about comparable. So 6 years there. So my first thought is, why can't I do this? Anyway, let me continue on. It says that she did not house hack her way to riches like many people do, as you know, through many years when the markets were really good. People did make tons of money on real estate. They still are. Not so much since the recession, but in recent years, absolutely. So she did not hack her way to riches through house hacking, or she didn't build a YouTube presence. Okay, well, that's something I might want to do, but yeah, that's just a dream. Anyway, she didn't do that. That earned her hundreds of thousands of dollars each year. Instead, she credits the start of her wealth building journey to her childhood. It says her family, which included her single father and 5 siblings, grew up very poor in South Carolina. According to Jackie, it wasn't an ideal situation, but her father worked hard and was able to put food on the table. Now, what she says, what struck me with with me from that experience was that I didn't want to be poor when I got older, she says. However, the same sentiment resurfaced again later in her life after her 11-year marriage ended. Again, she was determined to never be poor again. She goes on to say, the divorce was one of the biggest wake-up calls I had. It scared me because now I was alone and I needed to make sure I wasn't going to go back to poverty. So that's what got me started thinking about my money and building wealth. I think that is so true. Let me just pause here for just a moment. Our childhood and our experiences in relationships really do affect how we react to money. Do we have a good relationship with money? Were we lucky enough to have parents that were really great with money? And did they teach us things? I think my parents did teach me things. I'm not saying they didn't, but as you guys know, my father claimed bankruptcy back when I was in high school. And so I saw that as, I don't know, did my subconscious mind think that was somehow acceptable? And then years later, I went down that same rabbit hole of debt accumulation and then had a bankruptcy. Who knows? Yes, probably. So our childhood really does have a profound effect on wake-up calls. And that's what I teach people all the time is, how can you encourage yourself to have a wake-up call? That's what it's all about. Financial literacy is first and foremost driven by a wake-up call. I had the wake-up call, as you guys know, in 2003 in Seattle, Washington, in the Space Needle, where I looked out over Mount Rainier and thought to myself, I've got to make changes. I've got to do something. And that for me was the beginning of financial independence, the journey towards financial independence. So getting back to the article, it says that here are some critical steps that Jackie took that allowed her to retire at age 49 with, again, $1.3 million. Number one, she sought out a community that could teach her what she didn't know. So it says after her divorce, she became very interested in the stock market, but she wasn't really comfortable with the idea of investing on her own, like many people aren't, and potentially losing a lot of money. However, she ended up joining an investing club to better understand her money. A friend at work told her about this group called Better Investing, which says still exists today, and she's on the board of directors. So interesting. It's a blue hyperlink. I haven't clicked on that yet, which I probably will. So for those of you thinking about your journey right now, if you are struggling, like many people are, with, you know, even paying your bills and getting ahead financially speaking, start talking about it to your friends, to your family. Don't be ashamed of whatever financial situation you're in. You know, listen to Jackie. She says she wanted to break through broke, like many of us do. So she sought out a community, just like I want you guys to do as well. You have to find people, like-minded people, that have the same vision that you do. If you surround yourself with people that don't have that vision, you may lose your own. And that's nowhere to be. You have to be strong and you have to believe in yourself, as I always say. Let me go on with the article. She says, during these meetings, participants learned about the stock market and were encouraged to invest small, non-intimidating amounts of money. She says she can still remember it today, that her level of comfort continued to increase as she, you know, partook more within this community. And she said this was around 2007. Interesting. So in 2007, I was 41 years old. So for myself, being broke at 40 in 2006, yeah, when I think back, that was my first year, you know, I had a negative net worth of about 50 grand. Little did I know that just around the corner was going to be the Great Recession in 2008, which was good for me because I didn't have much money, as you know, to lose. And I just started stockpiling money into the stock market when the prices were low, month after month after month after month, and just rode that wave on up through the greatest bull market in stock market history. Anyway, so she goes on to say that she started learning about podcasts and she learned about FIRE communities because really in around 2013, she says that's when all that started, which I do recall. Yes, that's when I first heard of Pete Adeney, Mr. Money Mustache in 2012. And even though I shared with you previously, I didn't really get into all of those concepts, I was still really just obsessed, for lack of a better word, with the Susie Orman show on CNBC every Saturday night at 9 o'clock. I still miss it, just like I miss my famous, my most favorite Greek salad place here in the place where I live that went away. Anyway, you know, you can't go back and, you know, you just have to move forward. But yeah, I used to watch that show every Saturday night. And so she says she did similar things with podcasts and learned of the FIRE community, which I did as well, but it took me a while. I was still like-minded. I just didn't understand exactly all of the, you know, everything that was going on. And I was a later adopter, I guess you could say. And that came in subsequent years. Anyway, that's number one. She says her biggest takeaway from this, that community though, is you don't have to do things in a silo. So true. You can find a community that you can resonate with and learn through. Number two, she says she invested in her employer-sponsored 401k account. Great. So for all of you listening, if you are not contributing to your 401k, please do it now. Go back and listen to my episodes where you can figure out which of those vehicles should you invest in and when. So you would probably want to make it a goal to max out your 401k. So the article says, even before Jackie joined the investing club, she had been contributing to her 401k, and she even contributed enough to receive the employee match. So definitely the employee match, as you know, can be a lot of money. For me, it's about $5,000 per year. That's huge. So yeah, you know, you can hear your HR department talk about it and say, well, it's 3%, half of, you know, up to fifth, you know, we'll contribute this, that, and you get all confused. And you're like, whatever. But then when you really dive into your account at the end of the year and you look at the dollar amount and you go, wow, it was $5,000. Are you kidding me? That's a lot of money for your future. That's going to sit there and grow for multiple years. It's free money. You can't pass it up. So Jackie is right on track with thinking that way. She said, I never thought of it as investing at the time when she was contributing to her 401k. I think a lot of people are the same way, myself included. I was contributing to my 401k, and I remember thinking, believe it or not, that I would be okay because I was putting in 3%, 4%, whatever it was. I thought, oh, somehow it's going to grow. I didn't know how things worked. Anyway, this is not about me. I got to stick to the article. She says, I never thought of it as investing at the time, but my learning through the investment club taught me otherwise, and I started questioning what I was invested in through work. I decided that I should put my money in places where I can get both growth and a tax break. So I started maxing out my 401k, good for you, Jackie, and contributing to a Roth IRA. So the author of this article goes on to talk about the benefit of a Roth IRA. I know I've talked about it before. You can contribute your after-tax money into this account and invest it in a variety of stocks, index funds, and mutual funds, and ETFs. You won't owe taxes on withdrawals made in retirement since you've already paid taxes on it because it's after-tax money. That's why a Roth IRA can be such an instrumental part of your wealth-building plan. And there are lots of different ways you can open an account. And she goes on to list Fidelity, Charles Schwab, or download a robo-advisor app like Betterment or Wealthfront, etc. So she goes on to talk about that. And yeah, definitely. So for all of you listening, you would definitely want to open up a Roth IRA if you have not done so. Number three, Jackie says she contributed to other tax-advantaged accounts as well. In addition to contributing to her 401k and her Roth, Jackie invested in one more tax-advantaged account, it says, a health savings account. I've talked about health savings accounts before. For all of you that have a high deductible health plan through your employer, you would definitely want to open up a health savings account, in my opinion. And so Jackie feels the same. The author of this article writes that health accounts, health HSAs were designed for consumers who have high deductible healthcare plans, of course, as I just mentioned, to be able to save up for upcoming medical expenses. Contributions are made pre-tax through an employer-sponsored plan. That's the first advantage of it. And it says, similar to a 401k, you can also invest in contributions made to an HSA. For example, mine, I do have it through TD Ameritrade, and I do invest into it as well, into the market, into a mutual fund that rides the S&P 500, I believe. It's just a normal total stock type mutual fund. It might be an ETF. I'm not sure. I'd have to go double check. And so every couple of months, I go into my cash account where my money is going into the HSA, and I have to keep $1,000 there. But then anything above and beyond that, then I pop on over to TD Ameritrade. It's a two-step process, and then I click a button to buy shares. I figure out how many shares I can buy with the money that I'm going to purchase with, and then I do that. In fact, I just transferred $1,500 today or tomorrow. I need to actually do that step number two, which is, you don't want to forget that, to go back to your provider and make sure that you then purchase those funds. It says the second tax advantage of an HSA is that all the growth is tax-free as well. And the third advantage, it's a triple threat, they say. And the third advantage is that you can withdraw the funds from your HSA tax-free for qualified medical expenses. It says, but if you don't want to use the money for healthcare-related purposes, you can wait until age 65 and withdraw the funds for any reason whatsoever. But my thoughts on that are, yeah, no, I'm going to never take money out of the HSA. I will self-insure and pay, or, you know, pay my own healthcare costs for doctor visits and such. I'm not going to even tap the HSA. I'm going to let it to continue to grow, because we're all going to need money for healthcare expenses, right? Fidelity did a test, or a study, I should say, a couple years ago. And if memory serves me correctly, a normal couple would probably need $265,000 in addition to Medicare, right? So they need to build that into their plan going forward. So anyway, I may have misquoted that total number, but it's a lot of money that we need in addition to Medicare. So let me move on to number four. I do believe the HSA is a great opportunity, again, for those that you have a high deductible healthcare plan. Number four, she says, I got into the habit of saving. So for those of you listening, yeah, listen up. If you're not a good saver, you have to kind of break through broke. And think about that. You know, I was at a restaurant yesterday, rode my bike over to this little restaurant, and I had lunch outside. And I saw a couple sitting on some bar stools, you know, and I kind of looked over at them, and they were flipping through their phone, you know, looking at purses or something like that. And I'm just thinking, you know, there's so many people, of course, it's the holiday, so they're probably looking for a gift, I don't know. But they were all dressed up, you know, and looked really great. And I could tell they spent a lot of money on their outfit. And they just look like they were spenders. You know how you can just kind of tell, you know, you see people out, they're just always spending. They find enjoyment going to the mall, shopping online, and they spend everything they make. And yes, they may make $100,000 a year or $200,000 a year, but they spend it all, not only on their expenses, but on all these things. And if you get in that rut, it's not easy to get out of it. I was there from age 24 to 29, 5 years before my bankruptcy, where I was just spending everything I had and even money I didn't have, and racked up a debt of, you know, $25,000 or whatever it is before my bankruptcy. Anyway, again, this is not about me. I'm just giving my thoughts. Anyway, I'm reacting. but Jackie, back to Jackie. She says she got into this habit of saving. She says, Jackie reminisced about how once she started working as a teen, she would save every $2 bill that she came across. But the habit unknowingly followed really into her adulthood. So that's pretty cool. If you can save as a child when you have a little job, a $2 bill, right? And having that habit, though, follow you into adulthood is a great thing. She says, I would get a check and deposit it at the bank, and they would give me a $2 bill. And even as an adult, I just kept saving those $2 bills until I decided I didn't need to collect them anymore. She goes, I ended up with $3,200 just by saving $2 bills. But I grew into a habit from saving because of that, and it stuck with me. Congratulations, Jackie. That is amazing. So for all of you listening, try to get into the habit of saving if you're not. It's just going to take some discipline. Learn from Jackie here. So the author goes on to say, by the time she started getting salary bonuses and bumps at work, she had already built that muscle of saving, right? Because muscles have memory. And so she's learning to save. And it says it got easier for her to save that extra income to reach her goals. And it became faster and faster. In fact, she recommends that everyone build this habit, especially if they feel they have competing priorities and expenses. Jackie says, when you're young in your 20s and 30s, you're in a bottleneck where you have so many things going on at the same time, like getting out of school, having debt, and living on your own. All of those are competing priorities, and it makes it very hard to save. If you can't save a meaningful dollar amount, think about building that muscle over time by creating the habit of automatically putting something, even a small amount, into your investing account regularly. Yes, I agree. So I was listening to a podcast the other day. I can't remember who said it, but somebody said that really automated savings really is the way to go. So for those of you listening that have not set up automated savings into a savings account, even into your Roth IRA. I have a, you know, 506, how much is it? It's 7,000 divided by 12. So whatever that dollar amount is, $587, I believe it is, goes into that account every single month. I just put it on automatic, contributions. So every month I have to think about it. I just deduct it from my checking account. So the author goes on to say, it can sometimes be tough to manually move your money into your savings or investment account. Sometimes you may just forget, while other times you might get bogged down with other expenses and feel like you don't want to move the money out of your account. But when you automate it, you effectively prevent yourself from choosing to not save money. You can usually set up the recurring saving through your online bank, or you can use apps to do that for you as well. So I agree with that 100%. And finally, number 5 on Jackie's story is she found her FIRE number. So the author goes on to say in this article, one of the most important things you can do when pursuing financial independence is figuring out how much money you need before you can officially say you never have to work again. This number, popularly known as the FIRE number, is the amount of money you need invested if you want to withdraw a portion of your investments each year without running out of money. The yearly withdrawal rate typically goes off of the 4% rule. And of course, you guys know I've had some episodes about the 4% rule. And if I even believe in it, I do believe that it should be more like a 3% rule going forward, because I don't think the next 10 years is going to be that great as far as returns. But the author goes on to say this 4% rule, which says that in the first year of retirement, you can comfortably withdraw 4% of your investments, then slightly adjust it, the withdrawal rate every year after that, according to, inflation. Historical data shows that living off the 4% of your retirement portfolio could last about 30 years. So for those people, though, that retire super early, remember, that could be potentially problematic. Jackie used this rule to determine how much money she needed to have. She says, in quote, I came up with my FIRE number by figuring out how much money I spend each year, which was about 40,000, which is very typical, right? I mean, yeah, that's even with the money I have, I could spend up to 40, which I plan on spending less. And then multiplying it by 25, she says, as we know. And that would mean that you would need 1 million to be able to effectively withdraw 4% each year. The author of the article goes on to say, to figure out how much money you'd likely spend each year, you really need to track your expenses. So that's why you guys know I talk about your build a budget. So get in the habit of doing that now, every single year. Plan your spending. That's one of the biggest things you can do for success with money over time, is to build your budget and see it on paper first, and then spend from it throughout the year. You can't go wrong. You guys know I talk about it all the time. You net to zero. You can borrow from different buckets, that's great, but you can never spend more than you make. And you can actually see then how much you have going into savings and investing as well. And that savings rate should go up and up and up every single year. Anyway, I'm going off tangent again. I get so excited talking about money. But the author goes on to say that Jackie does note, however, that even once you finally reach your FIRE number, you may still face emotional hurdles. Oh, thank you, Jackie. I have not read that yet. And it's very true. That's exactly where I am. Hurdles when it comes to the idea of walking away from your job and retiring early. She says, in quote, "I actually reached my FIRE number at age 46." Okay. But it was still very uncomfortable because I had to get used to the idea that I wouldn't be coupled with a job and would need to pay for my own health insurance. Okay, Jackie. Absolutely. We see eye to eye here. So I didn't actually retire for another a few more years, which actually may be where I am. The bottom line then, to close out this article, it says that Jackie was able to reach financial independence through a combination of good financial habits. But it all really started with improving her financial education and understanding what numbers made sense for her. The author goes on to say, whether or not you're pursuing FIRE, turning your financial situation around and investing money can still be stressful and even daunting. But Jackie gives the following advice: don't deprive yourself and take away from fun because you'll lose the energy to keep making these financial moves. It has to be sustainable. Give yourself credit and celebrate the small wins. So that, my friends, is the article of Jackie's story, and I just wanted to react to that. I think most importantly in that article is that Jackie and I do see eye to eye with healthcare, right? Health insurance, and that's the big expense. And I started today's episode by talking about my Dear Dollar Diary episode number 6, thoughts on what I'm learning through Marketplace, through healthcare.gov. And so if that is true, that may motivate me then to retire earlier rather than later. All right, everybody, that's going to do it for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed learning about Jackie's story and her goal of retiring at age 49. And she did it, her FIRE journey. So, all of you listening, keep going, keep learning about personal finance. You guys can do it. I know you can. I say it all the time that I believe in you. Before we go, I do want to say one more thing about a Dear Dollar Diary content piece that I wanted to share with you, and you're going to think I'm nuts. So, a lot of times at the end of the year, I start thinking about money, right? I know I think about it all the time, really, but I really become hyper-focused at the end of the year, like right now. And I had chosen to go to Personal Capital before, which many people do in the financial independent community, and fill out the information about your assets and all that. So, I had a meeting with a Personal Capital advisor and learned that their fees are really kind of high for management, but I'm wondering if I may need more help other than what the advisory services people could do at Vanguard. I don't think so, but it's something I'm exploring and I wanted to share with you. I'll probably talk a little bit later about it, but again, their fees are a little high. So I'm going to be sharing that with you to see if it may be I make a switch, but I highly doubt it because I love Vanguard that much. So I'm going to leave you like I always leave you. I want you guys to make it your mission to walk with me to wealth. You know I appreciate you. I believe in you. And I congratulate you for every step of the way. I'm Evan Thomas. I'll see you next week on the Broke at 40 podcast. Alrighty, that's going to do it for another episode, everybody. Hey, I've got a favor. If you've got a friend that's struggling financially at any age, please share this episode with them. Let them know that I went from broke to $1 million net worth in just about 14 years. And if I can do it, anybody can. And if you're on Apple Podcasts, please give us a 5-star review. We would really appreciate it. What do I always say? It's okay to be broke at 40. It really is, but not at 50 or 55 now that you found us. You can change your financial destiny. I'm Evan Thomas, and this is the Broke at 40 podcast.